the three of us could stand anywhere and observe these kinds of violations and be proactive and catch all this happening. OSHA knows it's happening. They're complaining that it's happening. Yet we don't see the outreach. Now, that's wrong. There's a coalition put together in this town of federal agencies in city and the Mexican consulate. It's called the Justice and Equality Coalition. It involves the EEOC, the Department of Labor, the City of Houston, MALDEF, Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund, and the Mexican consulate. And last week, OSHA, when asked if they would join that coalition, said they would. And so they're going to be invited to join that coalition. Now, what's unique about this coalition, it's a proactive outreach coalition. And then basically, this coalition is mostly dealing with wage violations issues, wage cheating, or what we call wage theft. And if OSHA does what they told me they were going to do, which is work with that coalition, we might get something more proactive from them. But like I say, the three of us could go out on any construction site now and find these violations going on just by looking. And that's what OSHA needs to be doing if they're truly concerned about the high incident rate of injury among Hispanic workers.
Yeah, so those are the problems that are out there. Now, one of the things I think needs to be done is workers, union workers, non-union workers all need to kind of gather together with different organizations, the Metropolitan Organization, the National Interfaith Committee on Worker Justice, church and local groups that do care about these things. Because companies, it all comes down to money. You know, they're looking at a piece of paper and four accidents a year cost them so much in workman's comp, and if safety programs are going to cost more than that, then there's a likelihood that they're gonna go with that bottom line because it's just a number on a page. Whereas to me and you, that's a human being. That's the person we work with day in and day out. Mm-hmm. It's a person, not a number.
In about 5 minutes, we're going to be taking some phone calls. Any folks out there in the community that would like to call up and voice their opinions or ask a question of Richard here. Richard, is there a phone number that you can give the audience to possibly call regarding some of these issues that we're talking about here this morning?
You mean safety issues?
Well, just to make contact with somebody that if they needed some help, either call the office of the AFL-CIO or whoever.
They can call my office. They can ask for me, and I'll try to direct them to where they can get some help. 713-923-9473.
Okay.
713-923-9473. That's our office. We've also got a website. They can email us on that website if they've got problems or issues or questions. One thing that we've got to do in this town and working with all the groups you talked about, Ron, is do more outreach and actually more worker education. We've got to educate the workers so they know what the rules are, because I don't think their employer is going to tell them, and OSHA isn't around to tell them.
Yeah, it seems to me that, as we found out in this last month since we've been given this opportunity to air this program, is how many different trade unions there are in this town, how many different organizations there are, and they're all subject to the same struggles that everybody has. And they all are in their own little world. And once you realize that if you reach out and talk to these people, we all have same issues that we need to deal with, and how do we get together, how do we form a coalition, if that's the right term, to make some kind of change, or at least to get the voices heard.
Well, see, that's it. We need to stop focusing on differences and start focusing on what we do agree on, and that's really what it's all about, because, you know, we might not agree with this particular religious organization. We might not agree with this particular trade union or that particular worker or immigrant issues, but worker safety affects all workers. If you allow a company to take advantage of immigrant workers, the safety of those people, it's going to affect us. And it is in our best interest to make sure that they conduct themselves in a safe manner. You could be walking down the street and on anywhere downtown, and if they're not being safe, you know, a line could break and it could fall on your head.
And those workers access the the Harris County Hospital District system to get medical services.
Exactly.
So that's going to cost us all.
Has since complained she's being harassed by the press.
Okay, somebody's being harassed by the press. Aren't we all?
A little engineering technicality there that our engineer is quickly fixed. We're going to go to the phones here, and if you want to call in and speak, make a few comments, it's 713-526-5738. Line one?
Yes. I have a question. It's work-related. It may not be exactly the direction that you've been talking about this morning. I'm trying to find a resource in Houston, and I think KPFT is great in talking about employment issues. I would like to donate some clothes. I understand that when I lived in Dallas, there was an organization that you could give clothes to so that people would have nice clothes to go to an interview in, at least, so that, you know, they didn't get shut out ahead of time just because they, you know, didn't look as good as they could in an interview.
Right.
And I'm trying to find an organization that I can give some perfectly good business clothes so that people can have that to make the best first impression.
There are several organizations that you could probably contact on that.
Excellent.
One would probably be Purple Heart, which I know they take clothing donations and try to help people with that. Another is church organizations.
Well, the organizations that I was thinking of were directly oriented towards, you know, helping people find jobs.
Yeah. You might. Oh, do you? Okay.
Yes, there is an organization in town, and the name slips my mind.
Would Acorn know that?
I've heard of Search. And I've called the number that's in the phone book, and nobody answers.
Well, there's another organization that actually takes business clothes. It's for women primarily.
And yeah, I know. I've contacted their website and haven't got an answer.
Really?
Because clearly my clothes are not going to – I'm 6'4", so there's not a lot of women going to fit in my clothes. I've been in the case of looking for work before, although white collar, and I just think it would be terrible if someone was shut out of an opportunity because...
I think we accidentally got disconnected at caller.
Yeah.
I guess, are you gone, caller? Yep. You want to go take the next caller? I would just go to the next caller. I also recommend that also recommend the public health charities would have a screening process to connect you with the organization that you're interested in finding and keep up the good work.
Yeah. Okay, line three.
Yes, Richard.
Yes.
My name is Javier Moreno, and I was listening to what you were saying about the lack of vacation of migration of workers.
Yes. Yes.
And, I think that's pretty much the main issue of everything. If you educate the migrant workers in the safety and laws of their job, and which most of it is construction work, landscaping, and things like that, is the wages are being not industry early.
Yes, and in construction, exactly. And I agree with you. We've got to educate the workers, because they don't know the laws, and they need to know what the laws are. They have no idea of what is required under OSHA to make the workplaces safer.
Yeah, and I think that's the main cause of everybody's. I'm self-employed and I have my own business, and I've been a migrant worker and done all that, and you know I've seen a lot of accidents happen because people are not careful with their surroundings and they don't speak the language to the workers to tell them exactly how to do the job and how to better perform the job, how to do it expediently and do it safely, and that's how accidents happen. And I think that if they focus on explaining, on having maybe classes to teach them how to speak the language, maybe either the worker or the foreman or the supervisor or anything like that, to show them how to speak the language so they can understand how to do the things, and it'd make it easier on everybody.
Yeah, that's the key.
Javier, as a side note to this comment of yours, you might want to listen to the second hour of the program. We're going to have a spokesperson for migrant workers on discussing some of the issues related to the farm workers in Florida. So stay tuned. We might all learn something here.
All right, man. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
All right.
Okay. Line four. You're on the air?
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead.
Hi. My comment is just about the professional clothing. The organization for women's clothing is called Dress for Success, but I'm not sure if there's another one that takes men's clothing. But another place I thought of is Career and Recovery Resources, because they do a lot of job training and stuff like that. So that might be a place to call to see if they could refer the gentleman who called earlier about where to donate clothes.
Fantastic.
All righty.
I appreciate the call.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, there's a lot of issues out there in helping people get these jobs, whether they're white-collar, blue-collar, whatever, even protective gear. Okay, caller line six, you're on the air.
Yeah, just one more comment about the clothing. Hello?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's a facility that's directly behind what used to be called Enron Field, the new baseball park. It's two or three stories or a terracotta building. I don't know the name of the facility, but it's I believe it's transitional housing for men coming off the street. And I've taken lots of clothing there, you know, dress shirts, sport coats, shoes, slacks, those sorts of things. And they are most grateful to get those items. So if this gentleman that called in before will just drive directly behind the stadium, he'll see this facility. Again, I apologize, I don't know the name of it, but you can't miss it back there. And they're always willing to take clothing.
It's on the Hamilton side, is it not?
I don't know the street back there. I've dropped clothing off there a lot, but I just apologize, I don't know the street names.
Okay, thanks for your call.
Bye.
Well, and anybody that's actually looking for those type of clothes, you know, can contact these same organizations and see what they can do for you. Okay, line one, you're on the air. What's your name?
My name is Fred. I used to be a chemical worker in California about 25 years ago, and we had somebody die, you know. And it's true what you say about when OSHA comes to visit, they give you about a week's notice, and everybody dresses and does things just so, and then as soon as they leave, you know, everybody goes back to what they were doing. And we had somebody die who went inside a tank without the proper equipment, and, you know, they settled out of court, the chemical company did. But, you know, this was not the policy of the company, but, you know, you had a crew chief who was trying to cut corners. I mean, you need this to be enforced, because if you don't, there's all kind of people under pressure who will cut corners, you know.
Well, exactly. That's part of the problem, is that they try to cut corners every way they can, and they get away with it, you know, 100,000 times.
I don't say they're bad people, but it's just human nature.
Right, and they think, well, I got away with this before, so I'll get away with it again. And then they don't listen until somebody dies or there's a severed arm laying on the ground.
Well, caller, you bring up something that I want to ask Richard about. You mentioned the settling out of court, and that seems to be the kind of the trend or the way out of all these violations. And is that correct? It's easier just go ahead and take the chance and settle out of court than to really do what's right?
Well, I think that's the pattern. To my knowledge here in Houston, especially in the oil chemical industry, when there is an explosion of some kind, just recently there was a major lawsuit, and the family of the victim actually, you know, got a substantial amount of money, which they deserved.
That was Phillips 66.
Yes. And so you always have that litigation, you know, that moves separate from the other. The OSHA comes in. The settlement out of court doesn't involve, you know, OSHA leveling the fine and doing what it's supposed to be doing. But my impression is it's always way after the fact. And just what this gentleman described about the notice and the inspections, my impression of OSHA, it's not a proactive agency. It's not holding the radar gun up like the police does on the freeway.
It's looking more reactive people. Than proactive.
It's reactive. So they end up fining the company, and when you look at the fines, you know, the fine oftentimes is much smaller than what it costs that human life.
And these companies, they look at it like that's just the cost of doing business. They figure it into their budgets and everything. And, you know, you cannot replace that life. You cannot replace an arm or a leg and the suffering that's involved. Yeah, you...
I got one more comment.
Sure, go ahead.
It's interesting to know that the accidents are highest in farming and in construction, where Hispanics do most of the yeoman work, you know. That's all I got to say.
Yes.
Thank you very much, caller.
Thank you.
Okay, caller three.
Yeah. My name is Rick. I'm currently a laid-off white-collar worker, but about 16 to 20 years ago. I worked in chemical industries, mostly summer jobs, you know, between college semesters. And I worked at a refinery in Corpus Christi and a oil field in Lovelady, actually. One of the experiences I had there was, are any of you familiar with, like, chemical work or anything like that?
I'm passingly familiar with it because I work with a lot of unions that are involved.
I've worked in a few.
Yeah, do you know what a fracking tank is?
I don't know what a fracking tank is.
I know of it, but I don't know
particularly. It's what they use to, it's been a while, but it's basically the chemicals they use to basically rejuvenate oil wells. I didn't know any better. I walked into one of them. I mean, I didn't know what the level in the tank was or anything like that. And there wasn't anything in there. Well, I walked inside the tank, and, you know, because they wanted me to find out what the levels were, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know any better. I was a kid. I mean, I wasn't a kid, really, 22, you know.
But, so you were the human guinea pig.
Well, not really. It's like they never really told me not to go in it, and they probably didn't think I was going to go into it. But I went into it. I mean, it's not like they had to treat me nice. I was actually... You know, to be all fair with you, I was the boss's son, okay? That's how I got the job.
But well, you're not the only one that's gotten a job that way.
But I know. But I went in. I didn't know any better. And I felt the burning sensation on my skin. Not a harsh one, but a very slight. And I went out. And when I told them what I had done, they were absolutely stunned. They were stunned and shocked because they said people who walk into those things never walk out.
Wow. Yeah, you're lucky.
Yeah, I didn't know that at the time. And I just wish I knew somebody who knew something about exactly, you know, what I was exposed to, you know.
Well, how long ago was this?
I mean, it was many years ago, obviously, so there haven't been any long-term, you know, short-term effects, but I was wondering about the longer-term effect, you know, like cancer or something like that.
Well, one of the things, that's what material data safety sheets are about. Anytime you're exposed to a chemical, that company's supposed to have the MSDS sheets, which tells you everything that's known about that chemical, long-term effects, short-term effects, that type of thing.
It was just a tank in an oil field, you know, and like the office is like a little, you know, house, you know, and it was just out in the middle of nowhere. You know, this wasn't like some major operation.
Well, what you might want to do, you can call me at the number I gave earlier off the air, and I can recommend someone that you can probably call and try to get some, you know, get some information.
Yeah.
Regarding that chemical and any other legal liability that could be there, because you don't know what on down the line is going to happen to you as a result of that.
Yeah.
And he brings up a real good point, is that employees have the right, anytime you're exposed to anything, any chemicals that you're working with, you have the right to see those MSDS sheets to know, you know, in what way you're risking yourself, what protective equipment you're supposed to have and that the company has to provide. And
well,
before
see, I wasn't supposed to go inside the tank, though, but I didn't
right.
know that.
But,
yeah.
But
they didn't expect me to go in either.
Right, but it happened.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you know, here it is years later, and you're trying to go back and figure out what happened. But it's a good lesson for everybody that's listening that anytime they're exposed to something that they don't know what it is, they can find out. They can go to their supervisor and say, I want to see the MSDS sheets for whatever this chemical is. And, you know, you have that right. And to make sure that the company is providing the proper safety equipment. So that was a real good call, real good point to bring up.
Yeah, I wanted to bring up another comment. It's an unrelated issue, but it relates to what you're talking about and has to do with enforcement and safety. You're never going to get these companies to volunteer to do what's right. I mean, look at Ford. They built the Ford Pinto, and they could have put a $12 baffle between the bumper and the gas tank. What did they do? Well, Lee Iacocca said, oh, no, we got to keep this car under $2,000. So they left the baffle. I think it was under $3,000. Left the baffle out, and the occupants inside get incinerated every time there's a rear-end collision.
Well, see, I'm of the opinion that it shouldn't be just fines. When a company makes...
Oh, no. I mean, I'm even saying, you know, let's do a corporate death penalty on them.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a matter of manslaughter.
Let's
I mean, when
it.
They...
You know, corporate
when they
death
consciously,
penalty, and that's all fine with me.
When they consciously make a decision to accept that risk, to put this person's life at risk for a dollar, and something happens, they should pay the fine.
Yeah. I mean, if they're going to shave off, you know, a couple of dollars just to keep, you know... the profit margins up, you know, and let's be clear about this. That's what it's all about. It's not about, well, we're really concerned about worker safety because, you know, they try to
just tell them we
got to
wrap it up because we got other callers.
For the bottom line, because we're concerned about worker safety, our bottom line is protected too, and it's complete bull because they've already factored that in.
Yeah,
and they know that they can get more by paying the fines, even paying, you know, the settlement out of court to the individuals than they could by doing the enforcement. And the only way you're going to make them do it is if you invoke a corporate death penalty on them, and that's, I think, what we should do.
Okay, thank you, caller. We've got a couple more that we're going to try to take here before we finish up this first hour. Appreciate your comments. We got caller on line 5. Line 5. Go ahead, please.
Greetings, brothers. This is David Cobb, Attorney General candidate for the Green Party.
Hello, David.
Hello,
Hi.
David.
I would have never recognized your voice.
Listen, I just wanted to take us back a step and put the entire labor law issue into a legal context. And I think the last caller's point, his second point, is really important. The National Labor Relations Act, OSHA itself, are all rooted in the Commerce Clause of the United States Constitution, which is basically a subset of laws that protects and promotes the interests of employers based on their property rights. Yet we don't have a labor law that's grounded in the human rights of the employers who are actually producing the products, making the widgets, providing the service. And to sort of finish putting it into context, we really should acknowledge that it was the very militant labor activities of another century and then of the 1930s, including general strikes, mass sit-downs that were absolutely illegal under the current law, that led to the passage and implementation of the first National Labor Relations Act. And if we're going to have a human rights-based labor law, it's going to take a similar struggle or similar proportions on the part of workers. And everybody's a worker, by the way. Unless you're just sitting on your butt living off of your investment income, you're a worker.
Yeah, and I like to say if you don't sign your own paycheck, then you work for a living.
That's a fact. That's the best definition I've ever heard, brother. And so the point that I, just to put it into the context, unions were originally, as designed, courts found them to be criminal conspiracies. And no less than Samuel Gompers himself said, and I want to quote this is one of my favorite quotes, "History honors none above those who have set themselves against unjust laws, even under the point of rebellion." And I guess this call is really more of a comment that says we, as people who are concerned about issues of social justice, need to understand that we've got to take our struggle directly into defining the society and the culture that we want so that the laws that we want reflect that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, people have to move. If we want change, we've got to participate. When only the business owners participate in creating our laws, well, you're going to get laws that are tailored towards business. And, you know, things like OSHA and the Wagner Act, these things were only accomplished through millions of people on the move and making their voices heard.
Well, I think now if you look around the globe, a lot of the international struggles that are out there, it kind of takes us back to a time in the United States, you know, 50, 75 years ago, when we were doing just exactly that. We were taking it to the street. And, you know, you sure you hear of a few things that, that go on in this country today, certain movements that are going on, but compared to what it used to be like 50, 75 years ago, it is almost non-existent.
We've almost become comfortably numb. A lot of people just, they're just barely making it paycheck to paycheck, and they don't have time or the energy that's required to make these changes. Well, we're going to have to recommit ourselves.
And unfortunately, the age distance between those of us who historically remember how we got here and those of us who actually lived it is broadening. Because as I go into schools and talk to people, they're ignorant of labor laws, of why maybe their boss gives them a break in the morning when he doesn't have to, and so we've got to re-educate people around that.
Well, a good example is the weekend. There's a bumper sticker that touches just on that, and a lot of people don't realize that our weekend, our 40-hour work week, overtime pay, Social Security, I guess a minimum wage,
FMLA.
All goes back to, you know, 50, 75 years ago when people came together and demanded change because things weren't working. And we're going back to that today. So, David, if you've got some suggestions on just how we can revitalize this social movement in this country, I'm all for hearing them.
Well, I do, and I'd love the opportunity to expand on them a little more. I know y'all got several other callers.
Okay.
I will say this. This very conversation happened over our public airwaves is a damn good first step, and I want to applaud KPFT and all three of you gentlemen for all the good work you do.
Thank you very much, Dave, and we appreciate your call. We're going to go to line number
Line number six.
Line number six?
That's you. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning. I like your program an awful lot. Question for you. I'm driving around town. I live over here in the Heights, and I go by these new constructions. Some of them are 2- and 3-story houses. On the outside of them, I see scaffolding up there, but it's basically nothing but a house jack with some 2x6s put on top of it, and sometimes these are stacked 3 stories tall. And it's very dangerous. Is this legal? If it's not, is there anybody I can report them to, and how do I go about doing that?
Well, I'm just going to say it's probably illegal, but just like everything else that you see around here, there's a lot of violations. It's a matter of them being caught. Is that correct, Richard?
It's a matter of them being caught. Are there railings? Can you see?
No, there's not even railings. These are nothing but house jacks with boards on top of them. There's no railings, and these guys are up there working, and I don't know how much they're getting paid, but I'm sure they're afraid about their wages and their jobs, and if they report them, they get fired. So, I mean, what can we do about that?
Yeah, they're supposed, you know, I think the minimum requirement is supposed to be some kind of a railing. So if the person kind of backs up to the edge, he feels a railing that stops his body and lets him know.
And there's also supposed to be a tow board so that something doesn't accidentally get kicked off and fall on a passerby's head.
Okay, so say I'm driving down Heights Boulevard and I see a 3-story construction going up the corner of Heights and 6th Avenue, and I don't see anything like that. Who do I call, and how do I report it, or where can I look at the law to actually read what may or may not be legal?
I tell you what, there's some excellent resources on the web. You go to OSHA's website, and they have a lot of their documents actually posted on there, and you can go through, just do a search on scaffolding, and you can learn that way, or you can just contact your local OSHA office.
Yeah, I would just call the local OSHA office. I don't have the number, but I know they're in the phone book.
I'll do
and,
that.
And give them a call, and because they're probably not going, they're going to be surprised when you call them.
Yeah.
All right, because I'm not, I mean, I don't work construction. I work for myself. And I had one other comment I just wanted to make. I think what I've seen in the last 30 years in the labor movements in particular, I saw an increasing number of people in unions, working men and women, working out in plants, refineries, working in jobs that are very dangerous, voting for Republican parties and somehow getting scared to thinking that somehow a group of people were going to go take their guns away if they voted for people that actually had their interests in mind. Do y'all agree with this sentiment? And if you do, can anything be done to turn this on its head?
Well, that's a struggle we're having in the labor movement right now. And, in fact, the labor movement recognizes this. And we have a number of mobilization programs and educational programs in place where we're trying to re-educate our members around those issues. We call those pocketbook issues, paycheck issues.
No kidding. I mean, when I see a working man driving down the road in his truck on the way to the job site with a Bush Cheney
sticker on the back of his truck, it drives me nuts.
Makes me want to puke.
It drives me insane. I want to scream at him. What, are you an idiot? I know he's not an idiot, but why is he doing this?
Well, there's a couple of issues, that people kind of get wrapped up in, and that becomes the end-all and be-all of how they're going to vote.
And the other side uses that as a pressure point.
Exactly.
Effectively.
And the other problem is that the union movement has been successful. It's been successful in raising people's wages. So when you raise wages and you make people comfortable and they've got time, leisure time, as Sam Gompers wanted, then they've got time to think about other things and get. And there's nothing wrong with getting involved in other issues, but they can forget that it's really about their paycheck.
Okay, we're going to have to kind of wrap it up here with the phone calls. We're going to move on just a little bit here, and we want to thank all the callers that have called in and didn't get on today that maybe in the future you can call back.
Or in the second hour?
In the second hour, exactly. We've got one other portion of the program to go.
Enjoy the song. Be right back. Last month was busy as day. There was no time for a smoke. This month was a hard time. This week I'm broke. I was supposed to earn my bread by sweating my brow like the good book said. How come they wrote a line for me, but they never wrote one for the company? Everybody's crying. This month's just a line, line, line. Down at the local law. And darn it, seems funny when they need you, don't they? Always talk about the team. The next month they want to lay you off. Is that a great American dream? I'm supposed to earn my bread by sweating my brow like the global sea. How come they wrote a line? Okay, that was another song off the Power CD, which was titled Overtime, which deals with the fact that companies like to talk about the team and family when they need you to work 12 hours a day, but when they don't, they just send you to the unemployment line.
Overtime, what's that, Ron?
Yeah, exactly. I'd like to go ahead and mention a couple of current events. One thing, we had a caller come in and said that if you do a search for the Coalition for the Homeless, they do provide clothes for job interviews for men. So anybody that needs some clothes for an interview, contact the Coalition for the Homeless, and they should be able to help you out there. As I've said, Workers' Memorial Day is coming up on the 28th, and that's why we've been kind of talking about worker issues. But to give you an update on the story we did on our first show, we have Kitty Prounce on the line. Kitty, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, who are you? And
I'm Kitty Prowse. I'm an organizer with IBEW, International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local Union 66 here in Houston, Pasadena.
Okay, and you were active in the campaign out at Reliant Energy?
Yes, I was. We were striving to organize the field service representatives at Reliant. They're approximately 114 employees.
And how did that vote go? We talked to some people on the line that day and asked people to honk their support. What happened to the vote?
Well, the company hired what we call a union busting company. It's what they call on the out in the business world a consultant. They hired the Burke Group out of Malibu, California, and also Labor Information Services Group. To come in and meet with the employees, along with management, meeting with the employees. They had a very active, extensive campaign on their side, and they pay, you know, when you have the employees there 8 hours a day and you're paying them and you tell them to go to a meeting, they have to go to these meetings, which is called captive audience meetings. And so in these captive audience meetings, they educated them on the necessity of not belonging to a union, and you know what they wanted to keep their classification union free.
Which is an important point. they're forced to go to these meetings. They have no choice but to listen to this propaganda for as long as the company decides that they want them there.
Exactly. They're paying them. They're their employees. The key thing is that these employees are at-will employees. And at-will employment means exactly what it says. You are at-will. That means that you can be terminated. You can terminate your employment at any time you choose to terminate your employment. But the company can also terminate your employment anytime they choose to terminate your employment. And the only thing that supersedes at-will status in the state of Texas is a legal and binding agreement, which is a contract.
Exactly.
A good union contract.
A good union contract.
Well, even a lot of these high-level vice presidents and presidents of corporations, they always make sure they have a contract signed.
Exactly. And every one of them do. And even though, you know, the company chose to put out information on our officials of the IBEW, they put out the president of the international salary from 1999, filed on an LM2 report at $200,000 per year. But this man is over 700,000 members that choose to be members in the United States and in Canada, whereas the CEO and president of Reliant, is his annual salary is approximately $11 million.
And that's,
no,
he's over, what, 10
but
grand?
That was not put out on the information that was given to the employees.
Kitty, approximately how much money do you think that the union busters or Reliance spent on the union busters to get their way?
I have no clue at this time. I know that we have contacted the Department of Labor, and we are pursuing the information. As unions have to file LM2 reports, the union-busting companies have to file what is called an LM20 and an LM21 report, and they have a certain period of time that they have to, a lot of time that they have to do this in, and so as I have talked with the Department of Labor, and I will be talking with them, and as this information comes in, we will be getting it.
Okay, and what is the reason for them filing these reports?
It's required by law.
I mean, but what's the reason for that? Do we just have the knowledge of what they did with their money, or...
I'm not understanding your question. They have anything that we have to file by law, you know, the LM2s, which are the salaries of the union officials.
Right.
They have to file by law the salaries of, well, just like the president of the and the CEO of the company. That has to be, all of this has to be filed.
Okay.
Okay, so how exactly, what was the vote count? How many for, how many against?
It was 71 against and 42 for.
So are you going to be back out there in 12 months?
IBEW Local Union 66 has represented the employees at Reliant Energy since 1915. We have been in existence since 1984. We signed our first contract with Houston Lighting and Power in 1915. We represent the employees at Reliant. We will be here. The benefits that a lot of these field service reps receive today are because of the union that is on property. The only thing that they do not have is a signed contract, and that makes them still at-will employees, which the company can get rid of them at any time and not have to justify anything. And that's the key issue to, I think, to working people today, is that they need the protection of a legal and binding contract that they can, that they are no longer at-will employees, and any termination has to be justified.
All right,
exactly. Well, I appreciate your call, and we'll be keeping tabs with you.
Great
hopefully.
Show, great program. Workers need these programs.
Thank you very much.
Have a good day.
You too. Thank you. Goodbye.
Okay, right now... I'd like to read at least one poem on Workers' Memorial Day. It was written by Mike Baird, Lodge 21 of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. It was done in 1995. I'm not real good at poems, but I'll give it a shot. I write these words of honor for those who gave their lives, and for their families, their husbands, and their wives. For those whose lives were spent doing what they must, working for a living like every one of us. Their time cut short by things that didn't have to be, to make the workplace safer for people like you and me. To make sure their stories will never go untold, to always keep their memories from ever growing cold. We must remember the price they all had to pay when we honor the men and women on Workers' Memorial Day. Thank you, Mike Baird, for writing that wonderful poem.
And thank you, Ron, for reading. I think you did an excellent job. I would like you to once again tell us Workers' Day is when, and is there any activities planned, or we have a contact number?
April 28th. I don't know of any local events planned, but you can contact the Central Labor Council and see if there's anything going on, 713-923-9473.
Or call a station down here and leave questions or comments, and then they'll get the information to you or to myself here, and we can maybe follow up and get back with you.
Exactly. The song that's playing now was written back in the old Bush administration by my uncle in New York, a machinist, who went to work and his buddy got laid off. That evening he wrote this song at the kitchen table. It's about downsizing. So give it a listen.
Told me Joe got the axe this morning. He's been down. I got 10 years on my mortgage. I got 2 kids still in school. I live out in the country. Trying to live by that golden rule. I got the downsizing blues. Got a feeling like I'm gonna lose it all. I'm gonna lose it all someday. They'll forget anyone that they choose. Oh,
well, welcome back to the program, Voices at Work, here at KPFT 90.1 Houston. My name is Tim Pagel with my co-host,
Ron Gagne. Still
here. Who is that again, Ron, that we was listening to?
That was a band Heartland by my uncle, Buddy Hart, from Rochester. He wrote that song, like I say, in the 80s, Bush Sr. was in, and all the cutbacks were happening.
Yeah, he was doing his damage, too, huh? On this next hour, we're going to have a conversation with a spokesperson from a coalition of Immokalee workers in Immokalee, Florida. They're the farm workers that picked the tomatoes, the bulk of the tomatoes for Taco Bell and other fast food companies. And he's going to be talking about what is known as the Taco Bell Truth Tour and the boycott of Taco Bell. That's an ongoing boycott. And then we hope to have a representative from the National Committee of Pay Equity. There is an action day planned next Tuesday that highlights the ongoing discrepancies between men's pay and women's pay. But right now we're going to go off to a song that will segue into our guest, Greg Asbed, by Tish Hinojosa.
Have seen our country's roads, Bakersfield to Illinois, and when troubles come our way, oh yeah, I've seen my daddy pray. There's something wrong with little sister. I hear her crying by my side. Mama's shaking as she holds her. We try to hold her through the night. And Mom says, close your eyes, mijito. Dream of someplace far from here. Like the pictures in your school books,
You want to go to him now?
You can take us there. There must be something in the rain. I'm not sure just what that means. Abuelita talks of sins of man, of dust that's in our hands. I'm afraid, but I...